Hey everybody, welcome to the first part of episode 3 of you, Jack and Cameron from Panic Institute. This ended up being such a big episode that I edited it into two parts. There's kind of a natural break in the middle where I had to step away to walk my dog. And the final recording was so long that I figured nobody wants to listen to something this long. And this is closer to the length of episodes that I want to keep anyway. So we'll have two episodes, you know, part one, part two. They'll drop a couple days apart. So if you're listening to episode one right away, know that episode two is coming in just a little bit. But yeah, it's all from the same recording. I was so excited to have Jack and Cameron on the show. I am upset that I did not get this out in time to promote Mothership Month and all of their cool projects. I tried to share a bunch on social media. I just had a really wild month in terms of letting me be able to do stuff and having the physical ability to do stuff. So I apologize to Jack and Cameron for not getting this out on time. We even talk about it during the recording. And I say, yeah, I think I could manage that. And listening back to it, I was like, oh, buddy, you don't know what's about to happen. So please enjoy episode one. Like I said, episode two will be coming out in just a little bit. And here we go.
I don't know where Cameron is. The cam bone. And he's always on Do Not Disturb, so he doesn't get...
He doesn't get the notice. There he is.
You said to say... Beetlejuice.
You called him Cambone, and he felt that and had to come.
I did
talk to you about it. He was like, "Hang on, now."
Basement and lower tunnels.
Sounds. You playing Resident Evil over there? What's going on?
I was looking. Goblin Archives updated the mall. And they added a. Like a basement and lower tunnels point crawl map.
It's
pretty slick.
I gotta sit down. I really want to read all the little horror stuff they put out because I'm pretty sure I have. I think I got like a big bundle on Itch at one point that was like, here's this and like the four adventures.
Here's literally everything.
Yeah, and I just want to sit down and read it. It's one of those. It's that and Triangle HD are the two games that I just want to put in my brain.
Yeah, 100%. I have the quick start of Triangle Agency, but I haven't bought it yet. It's so intriguing. Mm-hmm.
It's that thing where it's like, I want to read it, not even if I end up playing it or whatever. It's like, oh, maybe I won't even like it at the end of it, but I want to read it. I want to know what this thing is. Cameron looks like I'm interviewing him for a job. Like,
yeah. I like to... Hold on, let me button this and get a tie.
Yeah. Cameron's ready.
I would like to draw your attention to the fact that I'm proficient in Microsoft Word.
Oh, listen, that's yeah. Which version though? Because there's been some
Windows 95 original edition.
Microsoft Turd, am I right?
Yeah, there's this copy paste thing everybody's going on about that's just blowing minds.
I'm really proficient in rich text format documents.
I look dreamy.
A lost art.
But yeah, hi. I was very surprised last night when Jack was like, hey, what if Cameron came on too? And I was like, all right, sure. Let's get everybody at once.
Let's do it.
Oh, is that bad?
No, it's just not what I was prepared for. My plan was that I would have Jack on one episode and then you on another episode.
I'm sorry, man. I just missed
it. No, it's fine. No. If it had been a problem, Jack, trust me, if it had been a problem, I would have said, hey, Jack, can we not do this?
Yeah,
it's great. It's
You're not interested in letting people know what you need.
It is one of my defining characteristics.
It's a very good characteristic. It's one of my favorite things about you.
But I thought about it because you mentioned it, and I immediately mentioned that to my wife. Where I was like, ugh, that's not what I had planned. And then I talked it over with her, and I was like, actually, this is better because the thing that we want to talk about is the thing that y'all are doing together, and so it makes sense to have the two of you together.
We've just been doing so much like press junket. Like I'm not doing anything without Cameron with all this stuff. So
we've really got this like Shaggy and Scooby routine going, and it's kind of fun. So
you'll never guess who's who. I'm Velma,
but we know where the sandwich went.
Yeah, it's good. You'll never guess who's who, and Cameron just takes a huge sandwich off screen.
Like,
Cameron, are you actually eating dog treats?
Yes, actively.
That's how he got into the whole mindset.
it's where the inspiration comes from.
We're just doing voice.
Yeah. I figured I was thinking about it last night, and I had the chat with Penny, and not that it was weird, but there was an energy that was missing from the first episode, and I was like, I think a video call to have a little better connection, but voice audio, like audio podcast, because editing video is hell.
Yeah,
it really is.
That's Cameron's entire world.
Like, and I'm sure it's hell even in the context of you're sat in one place and there will be a video camera on you the entire prospect, and it's continuous. Something like this, when I did the first episode, I was like, this is more trouble than I want it to be.
Jack, I feel like you and I spend most of our time on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have so many games where I'm the only person with a camera on, and it's...
Wait, you play with players camera off, like whole tables?
I mean, when it's your sole source of income, you become a little less discretionary.
You let them do what they want.
A little bit, yeah. And like the one of my tables, everyone at the table is neurodivergent, right? So like,
right.
Being observed is not a thing that I think particularly they want to do. And then you add things like, you know, body dysmorphia and like people wanting to, looking at themselves could probably break their ability to kind of enjoy themselves.
I feel that.
If I had my way, when I get to the point I'm trying to work towards, I will not anymore. I will only charge a lot of money, and I will have lots of stipulations. That will be the be like, when I can get to the, aren't you lucky to pay me to run your games?
It's $500 a game, and you have to have a camera, and you have to go out and buy this specific camera.
I mean, I am trying to get in that like $40 a game bracket, which exists, but only for people with huge, you know.
Listen, huge. I believe in you.
Yeah. I feel like you have to mainline D&D to do that.
I'd be fine with that. Yeah. I will happily play D&D for $40 a person.
I wish every time I had run D&D, someone had paid me explicitly for it.
100%. It makes it a very fun game. No, it doesn't. It still makes it a very, very...
It makes it a perfectly bearable game.
It still feels like work. That's the funny part. It's like I still get like the pre-work jitters. I still get the, maybe I could call out. And it's so easy, right? It's so easy to be like, I can't do that tonight.
Anytime I'm like, hey, I'm up to blank, you're like, cool, I'll cancel my game. I'll do it. I'll do whatever.
I'm only running three games right now. I'm making
I'll
money.
Cancel every game. What do you want?
Do you need me to quit?
I'd love to.
I'll close my account.
I don't want to write books. I do want to run games. I don't want to have to do seven of them a week.
Right.
I don't mind running a couple D&D games, but...
You want to run the game, and then... Mm-hmm. All right, I did it. Hands dust.
Jackie Boy is running his first panic table game on Saturday, which I'm really excited about.
Hey! Yeah,
that's so sweet of you. That's a big, big handover.
Right, Jack! I'm
excited.
Part of this working is us making, like, building up the mystique around your, like, legendary. Like, I want you to be the GM's GM, you know, where people are like, oh shit, like, if Jack Panic likes your stuff, then you're good.
Well, if you're Sam Reich, then does that make me Abria? I'm just kidding. That's absolutely.
I think that makes you Carlos.
Yes, that makes you. Yes.
Sure. I don't know who that is.
Carlos works on Dimension 20 stuff.
I don't know.
He's one of the production staff.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like one of the main producers. Like, nothing happens without Carlos's.
I only really watch the funny shows. I don't really watch the actual plays.
That's fair.
I do watch Dropout every day, but not,
really,
yeah, not the.
He's been in a couple APs himself. I'm trying to remember. I have an image of him in one, but I couldn't. He was in the Cthulhu game that Mark Meer run. On Mark Meer ran on Chaosium's channel, I believe. Also, that one was good. That was a banger of an AP.
Zach Oyama stan myself.
I love Zach Oyama.
Zach doesn't get enough love. I respect that.
I want to kiss that man on the mouth. That's how I feel.
Wow.
I've heard people refer to Zach as a comedy assassin, and I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. We watched the Jacob Boys Hockey Very Important People last night.
I want to watch that.
It's so funny. I won't spoil anything.
My partner is very iffy on that show because she doesn't get like normie core humor. Like so she has to be taken by the idea.
I'm with that. Like the I think like three of the episodes are like knockdown, drag out some of the funniest stuff I've seen, and then the rest you're like, I'll tolerate this and maybe it'll be good.
But I really think Vic Michaelis, the thing that they do is a thing that makes my funny bone.
Yes.
Giggle.
You have to be such an incredibly funny person to be that person in every episode.
To play the straight, mm-hmm. the wacky straight man.
Right.
I also think that one of the brilliant things about that show is that the overall, that first season ended up having like a strange arc to it. Like the edit.
Yeah.
It's all about the edit, right? It's like you say all the time, Cameron. It's
about Vic's relationship with her like family and the crew.
Yeah. And then, yeah. Just those like, those give me like very much like Tom Goes to the Mayor. That kind of like,
Absolutely.
Tim Heidecker, that era of comedy, which was.
Did you ever watch the thing that always makes me think of? Did you ever watch Strangers with Candy on Comedy Central?
Yeah.
It makes me think of that show so much. Strangers with
Candy's so funny.
When I was a kid, well, not a kid, but when I was the age I was when it was on TV, I remember being like, I don't understand what's happening. I don't get why this is like, what is supposed to be happening right now? Is this supposed to be funny? I don't understand. And then looking at it now, I'm just like, this is incredible work. As I remember being like, it's not funny because I'm not laughing, and then now I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw a Christopher Guest film when I was a kid, and I had never been exposed to, like, I think it was Waiting for Guffman, and I was like, why are all, I had never cringed in amusement before, I had only ever cringed, and so I was like, this movie's so painful, and then someone was like, no, you mean funny, and changed me forever.
Yeah, best in show is so good. But I could absolutely also see people watching and being like, I hate what's happening. I kind of hate what's occurring. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. Like, it really has to, strike you in the right
way. And I think in our current climate, the parody basically died because we like adopted in like pop culture, the whole like pathos is like the main form of humor now. Mm-hmm. It's because of Marvel movies, right? It's just like characters not being in, like looking at the audience and winking, going, We can't even take ourselves seriously, so it's really hard to be like. There has to be sincerity in order for parody to work, and we're not very interested in vulnerability being genuine for fear of being, I don't know, being canceled or being cringe.
Because a big part of those shows is buying into those characters 100% and playing it not over the top slapstick as a goof, but playing it straight according to the concept.
The Leslie Nielsen thing, you know?
Right.
I did really like Angie Tribeca that came out a few years ago, and that's just essentially Police Squad. But it's a bunch of, if you haven't watched it, it was on TBS, but it's,
that sounds good.
It's literally just, it's a very much like a lethal, like Naked Gun, you know, and Police Squad. Except it's more mocking or parodying like daytime procedural NCIS. The intro and everyone is a parody of that, like the Who.
Oh, it's got Rashida Jones.
Yes, Rashida Jones is in it.
She's great.
She's Angie Tribeca. It's funny. It's silly. Have we started? Is this the podcast?
We're recording. This is part of the podcast.
Okay.
This is the stuff you edit out of the podcast, but keep around for other stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're gonna we'll have kind of like a little intro thing. I'll have y'all introduce yourself kind of quickly. We'll have space for plugs and links and stuff at the end. But other than that, this was great podcasting. Let me tell you. Talking about weird normie core TV shows with Rashida Jones. That's great.
This is podcasting.
That's podcasting.
That's the business, baby.
And I win the Boonta Eve race and my freedom. Wow. People don't talk enough about the fact that he was a slave in that movie. That's
Yeah, that's wild.
Anakin?
That's
a wild choice.
Like, I feel like everybody knew he was a slave, but I don't think people internalized the fact that he was a slave.
Well, it was 1997, so no.
His nobody lived really, experience.
Nobody really internalized the fact that his mother was an indentured servant and he was born into slavery.
It's wild, though, that, like, he... I mean, I know that he goes back in the second movie and he finds her dead, obviously, but it is wild that they were just like, I guess we just take your kid, huh?
Yeah,
I guess I can't do it. And then he's like, not even that, Qui-Gon was like, I will cheat. I don't have to deal with this woman. I don't need
it.
I just want this kid.
In the Jedi weird. Way.
It's a little
I
weird,
win.
I saw recently that apparently the plan was that Obi-Wan Kenobi's real name was Qui-Gon Jinn. So there was actually...
Oh, that's where it came from?
It was flipped. And so Obi-Wan Kenobi, when Liam Neeson is Obi-Wan Kenobi, when he dies, young Qui-Gon takes on his name, which is why he was like, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Because
it was just like a... But then he was like, that's probably a bad twist. I probably shouldn't do that.
I do appreciate all of the little weird Star Wars factoids that crop up sometimes, and how so many of them are like, George, that would have been a bad idea. I'm glad we didn't do that.
Somebody was telling him no. It's just not enough stuff.
Yeah.
Does anyone tell you no, Cameron? Is that a thing? Is that a thing that you get on set? Does anyone hold back your? Is your production pretty good about?
If they're on set and telling me no, they're not on set for long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But no, I'm joking. Yeah, I'm constantly getting pushback because I'll be like, "What if we just like put a jetpack on the cat?" Then people would say, "No, that's probably not the best." Someone stop him,
Cameron. I'm looking at our backer kit page.
Are you? Yak, are you looking at our backer kit?
Well,
page?
I actually haven't looked at it that much the last couple of days because it's been making me fucking anxious. It's been bad.
Looking at it.
Well,
it's
we're dead center at our backer kit campaign right now, right? It's like 16 days in, 17 days in of like.
So it's the worst time. 30.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Well, time. And so I've just been for every great new back, and like it's incredible. Suddenly, people will be like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna drop multiple hundreds on this project," which always amazes me that people are willing to
sure.
You know, shell out for what obviously is a very quality product. But then 14 other people will be like, "Just looked at my finances. This Can't is not the project," and just cancel. So for every step forward, it is 4 steps back. This week
we're still trending up despite all the cancellations. We're
the
getting,
ball is rolling uphill.
We're getting, it's like we're getting two, but they're obviously not one for one. So it's like somebody's canceling a $60 book and then we're getting a $15 PDF. So it's not
right.
This morning I thought we were 5 away from 24.
$5.
I thought so.
Man,
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're 5 away from.
I've been avoiding looking at it
from
too.
23.
For my,
yeah.
The exact same reason.
We haven't had any cancellations. The other thing too is people can adjust their orders, right? So they can go, okay, I don't need to get the.
Sean McCoy, who made Mothership, is very much like just don't look at cancellations. Don't even think about it.
No, I can't imagine looking at it at all. I would just be like, I will look at it when it's done.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what the updates are. We'll see what it is.
I mean, for me, it's
we
like
were
everything
at
23 else.
850 earlier. So
yeah. So somebody didn't. We didn't lose any. It was the same number of.
It's been pleasant because for every like 4 cancellations, then 2 more or 3 more people will like back at like really fabulous tiers, and then I think like the day later, their partner goes, "You did what?"
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
They get an email and go, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, before we get into it, I just gotta say this because it's in my brain, otherwise I'll keep thinking about it. We played that mech game Home last night. Are you familiar?
Ooh.
Yeah,
I saw you post about that.
Yeah, we played last
night.
I love
it.
Have you played it?
Mm-hmm.
Just okay, once. So we played it last night. It was our first time playing it. I wasn't a very successful. It was successful. We had a good time. It was very long. Nick had literally, they were going to play Pathfinder, and then one of their dudes dropped out. So he was like, let's do this. So we were literally learning it as we played it. But he set it up on Canva, Cameron. So we were playing, we had the map making aspect on Canva.
And they just screen shared that.
And, well, no. We all signed into it. So when we were doing our collaborative world building thing.
Canva as VTT?
Everyone was using
smart. It was so smart. I had a lot of fun.
So simple and so brilliant.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. But really all it made me think is we should make a game that is this where this isn't a byproduct, but this is the play loop. Like, it doesn't have to
I'm thinking now we have to pitch that to Canva.
Yeah, yeah.
And be like, listen here, idiots.
Literally. Yes. I mean, maybe. I feel like at the very least...
Beautiful business hippo, get over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I will... that was my... I had to get that out of my
head. No, that's fair. That game... I saw you post that image. It looked really good.
I tried to incorporate elements of it into the Power Rangers hack I made for Mothership. To varying degrees of success, but I think it'd be like incorporating even more of the map making as part of it would be fun.
I think that you your Power Rangers for Mothership would actually be better as a Lancer game. You just have to learn Lancer.
See, but then I'd have to learn something, Jack.
Yeah. Well, now you sound like a D&D player. So.
Oh no!
You can just make a hack. You don't have to learn any rules. You're just like it works like this.
Yeah, this is a Powered by the Apocalypse hack. So, just believe me when I say that.
Roll your d10s as you do, and Powered by the Apocalypse. All right, let's do a proper intro. I can edit.
Oh yes, podcast.
Right, we're not just chatting. Jeez. We're not. Listen, that's good. It's good energy though. Mm. It's good energy.
My desk cheese.
This just hangs out for if you need it.
I left it here last night.
It's his mascot.
It's wrapped. That's good.
It is wrapped.
Desk cheese is Jack's inception totem.
That's how he knows.
I sniffed
the wrong smell.
Yeah. It smells like Gouda.
We can't get into this, but another movie that I wish this people weren't as up their ass about, but also were more up their ass about. Because I think that movie presents a lot of really interesting ideas, but people focused on the wrong ideas as being the interesting ones.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty cool movie. I think that most of the cool things about it for me are the production. I think it's really cool how it was made.
Yeah.
I really like that part of Christopher Nolan. I really don't like his storytelling.
Yeah.
This is the thing I've been saying for 10 years because I'm an insufferable twat. Total Recall is a better version of Inception than Inception is because you can make a lot of the same claims through the story that he may be still in the I'm a secret agent on Mars thing, but the movie isn't about that,
right?
Which is I think more
it's about imagination, but an extremely limited imagination.
Yeah,
like it's bizarre, and I feel like aesthetically, Chris Nolan didn't mean to become this, but he's like the quarter zip fleece of cinema.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why Inception makes me think of Bitcoin, but it does.
Wow. It's like,
yeah. And it's just part of it now. For me, The Prestige is a perfect film. Like,
I love The Prestige.
It's his best work.
One of my favorite movies, yeah.
Yeah. Everything else, though, just like, even what was the one he did? The biopic recently about the bomb?
Oppenheimer? I didn't see it.
Yeah. Even Oppenheimer just feels like The Wolf of Wall Street somehow. I can't put my finger on it, but it's very much like my dad owns a dealership. And his dad doesn't own a dealership. It's not fair.
He's an accomplished filmmaker, so it's one of those things that I feel annoyed with him because of how much I like and respect a lot of his work.
Right.
So when I am annoyed with him, it's not because... I swear it's not pretentious. I just was being a hipster.
Oh, mine is. Yeah.
Hey, no, I'm pretentious.
Is the quarter zip fleece of filmmakers. Is this our introduction?
Maybe. God, if I heard someone say that about me, I think I would log off the internet forever.
Oh, no.
I would be done.
About you, Matt.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the next episode. I'm not saying the number because you never know what's going to happen. Next episode of What You Doing podcast, the podcast where I talk to cool people about the amazing projects that they're working on. Today, we have a twofer, which is very exciting. This was originally going to be a two-part episode, and then we've just doubled up. We've just decided put your chocolate in your peanut butter. Today I have Cameron and Jack from Panic Institute. Say hi.
What up, thugs?
Hi.
No. Thugs? No, cancel the podcast. No, it's canceled. It's over. Canceled. It's done.
Sorry, it says here, say what up, thugs, Matt, on the thing you handed me.
Yeah, why did you send me this? Yeah.
Your stage direction says to say what
I'm
up.
I'm not going
to
say this third word. I can't say that on the internet. What are you saying?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having us on your pod. Your pod. That's what we call it. Biz.
Yeah.
Pods.
We're biz people now.
Yeah, we're biz people.
This was great. I was Jack was honestly one of the people I was thinking of when I was like finally putting this together and like I should do this thing. Jack was on the sort of initial list that I put together. And that's only because I didn't at the time know Cameron. Not to exclude Cameron, but I just didn't literally know about him at the time.
I'm bald.
That was why. I was like, I can't have bald people on my audio podcast.
This is a podcast. Jack has such beautiful hair. His coif. Like, Matt, yours is angelic and long, but something about the hair.
I have Disney Prince hair.
Mine is very unkempt right now, so I accept that.
Still, quality volume, but there's something about Jack that, like, you could trade it to Prince's for fine opals.
Yeah.
Actually, Cameron, I have a... So my hair used to be longer than Matt's.
Yeah,
And when I got cut off, I saved all my hair. So when I see you at PAX, I'll bring you my hair so you can make a wig out of it.
I'm going to put it in the coolest damn little, like, raven-shaped locket and wear it close to my breast.
It's too much hair. You'd have to encase it in Lucite. It's like a foot and a half of...
As in all things in my life, I will eventually encase it in Lucite.
Okay, perfect.
Just has a big list.
The room I'm sitting in is a museum of horrors.
I feel like I won't out our secret places on the internet, but Matt and I are in a Discord together, a friendly zone, and I constantly talk about Cameron, and I think I give the energy of like my girlfriend who lives in Canada.
My uncle who works for Nintendo. Yeah.
This cool guy that I definitely know, 100%.
Yeah.
Don't ask about it. I need video of y'all at PAX just like holding hands, skipping down the hallway.
I got my pass because I pitched that I was going to be recording my first experience, like posting to TikTok my first experience at PAX, which I guess I will. So yeah, maybe we do need videos of us running around.
Oh, I have gadgets. Do you want gadgets? I'll bring gadgets.
Sure.
Let me be your Q.
Okay, yeah. That we can get into.
Cool.
Q from the James Bond series, not from
Star Trek
The Next Generation.
I think it works actually both ways.
You're a bit my Q in that.
Thank you. Well. Yeah. A godlike being who exists to make your life just hell.
Interesting.
I think the best thing that they added to Next Generation was somebody to keep Jean-Luc's ass in line. I think that's the best character thing of
Q. Actually.
Someone just shows up every so often and is like, hey, watch your ass.
Smile a little more. Yeah, we did. Okay. No, we didn't. I'm Jack.
No, yeah, Jack. we haven't done actual intros.
We're all Jack. Sorry.
Cameron makes me want to make a lot of jokes that I don't want to make on the podcast.
Yeah.
Can't believe you said that word.
Yeah.
Jack, why don't you give us a quick intro, and then after that, Cameron, go.
I will do it.
Hi, I'm Jack, Panic. I am, better known as Dungeon Club or Dungeon Club Games Online. I, make stuff. I make toys. I do have a couple RPGs that I've made, but I guess I should just start saying I make RPGs. That's probably the easiest way.
Imposing than I make toys with an ellipse at the end.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's not that you make toys, it's the trailing off, as you say it.
I'm just really interested specifically at this point in my creative career in making things that are fun that can supplement most games. And those are like, so maybe mini games is a better way to describe it. But yeah.
But not games with minis.
I don't really like games with minis.
Yeah.
I don't really use minis that often. So that's kind of my whole deal. I think I'm most known for just pumping out a shit ton of content. I think that's my main claim to fame is that for about a year and a half, I put out a post on TikTok every day, every other day.
And they're all amazing and fantastic.
Well, that's very kind. And that's kind of that. Yeah, I'm a professional game master, and I spend all my time writing TTRPGs.
And he makes toys.
Toys?
The upward question is insidious.
It's my turn. Hello, I am Cameron Danger Stripmatter. I am the host and warden of the Panic Table, the internet's single most electrifying mothership RPG actual play and sci-fi comedy horror show. Man, that's a lot of genres all mooshed into one delicious ball. And currently I am the frequent co-collaborator of Jack Panic, and when the Panic Table and Jack Panic did together, we formed the Panic Institute, a consortium of higher terrified learnings, and together we have created now two offerings that will be delivered in 2025 to what I hope is just like the drawn out nearly orgasmic cheers of our followers. Please, please edit that part out. Please, Matt. Matt, please. I'm begging you, man. Please.
You know, that's going to be a stinger. That's going to be... That's the start.
Yeah. 100%.
That's before the music to get you hooked.
Matt, my mom can't know I talk like this. Matt, come on, man.
Well, don't show her the podcast.
Too late. Okay.
She's listening.
Dang it.
Yeah, sadly, you already gave me her email address, but...
Terry, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
I love the way Cameron describes like when you combine the Panic Table and Jack Panic. I like the idea of like this cursed object of like this like SCP object of a table, and then Jack just sits down and this whole house builds itself around, like this compound builds itself around him.
I picture it as like
table and a person.
When the table and the person combine, then the SCP Foundation builds around it. The Panic Institute is born.
SCP was a big inspiration for our first project. The Panic Institute was kind of born out of the idea that we wanted to present the idea that we are a shadowy cabal of bureaucratic, futurists.
The thing we all love to presume exists.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The Illuminati, but not weird. The Illuminati, like we used to talk about them, like in 2010.
Yeah, pre-Jay-Z.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Illuminati, but like a little gay.
Yeah.
Just a scotch.
Well, it's the Illuminati, so you don't know how much.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Who knows? I love this. This is fantastic. I'm completely thrown off my guard, and I love it and appreciate you.
We came for you, Matt.
God, yeah. It's too. I'm glad that this is happening like middle of the day, because if this was an evening record, I don't know. This
would be too fried.
Right. Yeah. It feels like I wouldn't be able to handle this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you taking us today, Captain?
So let's start with Cameron. Cameron. So yes. The Panic Table. How did you sort of get started doing the Panic Table? What's your history with doing actual plays? And then I guess, video production. Like what was the thing before the Panic Table that sort of incepted you to call back to it?
So there was this wizard, and he was trapped under a cart.
That's how it always starts.
Yeah, yeah. So I did the bananas thing of having like no DM experience, no actual play experience, and then just like we were watching Dimension 20. So by day, I own a production company with my partner called Failure Island, and we make commercials and that kind of stuff. And so we're based out of Brooklyn, and we were sitting in our studio, and I had just wrapped on something and was enjoying Dimension 20 and thought, how hard could this be? And Matt, it turns out it's so hard. But we just did the coconuts gesture of starting from nothing and just coming and swinging as hard as we possibly could.
The greatest hubris moment of how hard can this be? Cut to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My beard used to be like red, and now after a year of this, like it's shot through with all these like white streaks.
You look distinguished.
Thank you. That's absolutely like the stress and panic of the Panic Table. So it's been learning. I've become this like blood mage of trading life for episodes of TPT. So that's cool.
I actually watched the first episode of
Unaccompanied Minors.
Unaccompanied Minors. I wanted to keep saying unsupervised, and I was like, I know it's not unsupervised. Unaccompanied Minors, which is a fantastic pun. Really appreciate that. And I watched most of almost all of the first episode because we finally I had to stop so that we could record. And let me tell you, I had a great time.
Hey, thanks, man.
And obviously, we didn't talk about this. So this episode is focusing, like we talked about, the Panic Institute. We're talking about Dog Eat Dog and Void Stream, the two projects that Cameron alluded to coming in 2025. Dog Eat Dog on crowdfunding now on BackerKit. I hope to have this out in time when you can still back it. What's the time on that?
Matt, get it out.
Nobody, 13 days. I could do it. I think so. I believe
if I
me.
Have to deliver episode one of Dog Eat Dog, the actual play, in 2 weeks, then you can do it. You can do it, Matt.
I could do this audio recording. That's much easier.
He just doesn't edit it.
I just here you go. It's the MP3. There you go. That's the only reason I've thought about doing a Patreon is to just be like, give me $5 and you can have the episode now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be cool. But yeah, so I watched the first episode, as I said, of The Panic Table, and
yes.
I'm not going to say like I'm a connoisseur of actual play. I've watched and listened to a number of actual plays, my unprofessional opinion is it's pretty damn good. So
thank you.
I hope people listen to this, check it out. Obviously, I want the goal of the podcast is to get people to go check out crowdfunding projects and all that.
Sure.
What was your big takeaway? I think from the end of that first production, like how long did it take from when you actually started recording, because it took however long beforehand, I'm sure, how long did it take from when you're like, okay, we're in our seats, we're in our places, our cubbies are set, hit record, long till you stopped hitting record?
For kind of like 30,000 feet, I think we did like 4 months of pre-production and casting and just all that stuff. Like I had been world building and all of that stuff, working with Sylviana, our producer, during that time. The show itself was a surgical 7 days of recording. So we did that back to back in 2 weeks time. We had a like 2 day break in the middle, and I think that, and then yeah, and then like 6 months of post.
That makes sense, because you're dealing with like just a rough guess, like 4 or 5 camera feeds, audio feeds, special effects.
Nine cameras, and one mic per player, so that's 5 microphones. Yeah.
What was your kind of first? What was your takeaway after doing it, as after you got past the feelings of, oh god, I never want to do this again, as everybody who does a thing feels?
Oh sure. I was really super proud of it, because we were like, this needs to look as good as the best ones as far as like aesthetics goes. That was one of the goals going in, and so I feel like, I mean, the team really nailed it. Our art director recently got like an award at the New Jersey Web Fest for putting together that set, and she deserved it 120%. It was so beautiful, and so super satisfied about that. It was really slamming into the reality that people have not figured out how to monetize actual plays. That I knew going in, like I had done some interviews with other people doing stuff, but the thing is, everybody we were interviewing, like by far and away, it's all Twitch stream live style actual play, the like RGB headphones,
right?
You have on the like far end like stuff like Blackwater D&D and Critical Role, but and then in the middle just lots of people in their rooms with cool overlays, and so we didn't know exactly what that would be, but really just slamming into that barrier of like, it's made, people are really responding to it, and also, oh, this is, it's not going to make money until we have like 1 million followers, and that's just so just that desert of how to do that. And so it's, I found it inspirational. There was some like Dark Night of the Soul stuff right at the beginning, mostly because it wasn't just me in there. It's, you know, it's a team of 3 of us at Failure Island, and so having that come to Jesus of like, we need to figure out how to make this make money, or we can't do it. That's just not, like, this was not, and I don't believe in because we're not doing big box stuff like D&D and Hasbro, but like right now we're just not working with that. We're trying to like emphasize indie games, because I think if it's hard enough getting our voice out there now. It would be even harder with D&D because that's so saturated.
Right.
So approaching those indie publishers whose annual marketing budget would cover maybe one of our episodes, you know, and being like, money, please, is just isn't the way to do it, you know,
right.
At least for the format that we're doing it. And so we had, you know, the responses were good. We started winning some awards and people started like popping out of the woodwork to see our stuff. And that was really, really exciting. So as we moved into this half season, because this is Dog Eat Dog, our new actual play coming out, preceded the book that Jack and I are working on. And then Sean McCoy said, hey, if you're already making a mini AP for Mothership Month, then just also like sell your sawdust, put everything that you put together in for a book. So what I'm building towards is making an AP that makes sense for a wider audience, is more consumable for like normies and people who just want to watch like a dropout game show, but not necessarily know what like an RPG is. And I'm really excited to start testing that theory and you know, like opening it up to where it feels a little bit like an RPG, a little bit like reality television, and then eventually stretch into, get this on channels that can afford it. Instead of asking publishers to pay for things, ask Doritos to pay for things. Figure that out. And so... So that's the dream. But how did I feel? Terrified and excited all at once. Exhausted. Did I already say orgasmic earlier? I think that, yeah, cut that out. Matt, cut it out.
You're making it hard to cut it out if you keep saying
please,
it.
Please cut it out.
It's harder.
Please.
So, the first one I might have been able to.
Yeah, in the midst of that, coming across, I think we talked about this on a different video interview, but Jack, I think I made like a tribute post to the way Jack makes his like D10 tables on Instagram and TikTok, the cool little carousels. And so I was like, look, Dad. And Jack was like, pretty cool, bud. And that's how it started.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, it's not uncommon for people who have been following my work on TikTok specifically to, when they do a version of that, to then be like, hey, I'm sorry that I'm doing that. And of course, the irony is that like I was just looking at TikTok and I was like, I could just publish. I could just use this to publish. You know, it's nothing special. I'm just doing words on paper, which is RPGs, you know, it's just instead of charging people for it. I did the same thing Cameron did. You know, it's just like, I'm just going to give it all away. That is funny because that is how he sent it. And it was a really good post. I really liked it.
This is also back when I assumed, based on the volume and quality of work that Dungeon Club was doing, that it was an organization of 4 to 5 people.
You could have easily told me Dungeon Club was 3 people, and I would have believed you.
Yeah, that's how incredible Jack's work is.
We actually are 3 people now. I just expanded two of my friends who are game designers and game lovers.
Prove it, Jack. Send high-resolution pictures of all your feet together.
You're going to meet them at PAX. You're going to be staying in the same place with them. So,
In order for me to believe it, I'm going to need at least 8-megapixel photos of just everybody's feet in a little tight feet? Grouping.
Okay,
socks, no shoes.
I've got that. Prove I'll send it to you right now.
Yeah, unrelated, I have that. So I'm on it.
Yeah, we've got it in black and white and color.
Yeah, do you want like a filter or do you want?
Oh yeah, mix it up.
Do you want clean faces?
But then, he messaged me and I was like, okay, here's a person, and I haven't had that many people. I've had a handful of people reach out to me about collaborating, but mostly people kind of like no one who had like filmed an actual play that looks as good as the first season of Fantasy High. You know what I mean? Like it was a little, I honestly thought I was being catfished because I was like, well, you had just put it out. I think you had just launched, like when you created your TikTok for Unaccompanied Minors.
Right. We had like 6 followers and I was like, dear Dungeon Club, to whom?
Well, yeah. So I was like, you've got 100 followers. What's going on here? And then, I was like, they're just stealing other people's content. But no, it was all,
Dungeon
it was
Club,
all real.
Would you like to be best friends?
That's kind of what it was.
Exactly. Check yeah, yes that was weird too. We didn't do any social media like engineering and stuff. So having a really rad ass show, but not having the audience outside of like the Mothership Discord server. And that was a big thing too, Matt, is learning that people who love RPGs are not people who necessarily enjoy watching AAPs. Like, even me, like, I'm super, like, I'm picky. That's why I love Dimension 20, because they edit it. Like, I don't want to watch 4 hours of something. That's not what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't watch a lot of AAP. And so I get it. Like, and then running into that too, it's like, oh, of these 11,000 people on this amazing Discord, only about, like, 5% of them actually want to watch this. Mm-hmm. So...
Especially that like was a an really OSR community, like
Mothership
is not. I mean, it is an OSR, but the community is its own thing now, right? They're not really like,
They're doing like a whole new school thing. I don't even know what it is.
And that is to say, I feel like the Mothership community is very inclusive and very. Sometimes the OSR community as an umbrella gets a little bit of a bad label.
The beard goes very far actors. Down the neck sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, there are some grognards in there for sure, but. Yeah. But yeah, I think that I was just so enamored. I was like, what the hell's going on here with this actual play? Because I also don't consume a lot of actual plays.
Right.
I just don't have the attention span or time for it. Like you were saying, I can't watch 4 hours of other people playing a game. If only because it makes me a little angry. Like I want to play a game.
I could be playing a game right now.
Yeah. What's happening? Why am I watching?
Do you think that helped with the production of the first season where you were not terribly familiar with APs? Do you think that like
absolutely?
Oh, I you know avoided pitfalls or whatever or like
yeah.
Do you view that as a positive?
Well, yeah. So knowing that like just right out the gate that though I respect it, I knew I didn't want to do a Twitch stream format as far as like length and the kind of vamping you have to do during Twitch and like that's a whole. It's a different rodeo with a much more difficult to ride horse. So my hat's off to people who have successful Twitch streams that do that. It is so much work and they really put it in. But yeah. So like immediately at F Failure Island, we were like, nope, that's hard. So we knew that wasn't going to be a thing. And so I was also therefore like unschooled in long form, truly like 4 hour session long form stuff. And I think that helped because coming from just like a normal like theatrical background of you know like directing actors for short films and theater and that kind of stuff, we also took the leap of for season one only using true actors, not actual players. And so I think that really sparkles in it's the key ingredient, like I think of Unaccompanied Minors is just the cast is awesome. They like, and their experience isn't one that's confined by like, well, okay, that's not true. There is one named Anwar and he's a gamer. So he was like, I loot the body. But every single other person was like, what are the implications? What are the ramifications? We should fight about this. And so really seeing them unencumbered by 5e, unencumbered by other stuff, we're able to just really make buck wild decisions, and I think that are really true to the heart of Mothership. Blossoms and flourishes in virgin hands. Please cut that out. But Matt, please.
My bonus episode of all the things Cameron asked me to cut.
I'm begging you, Matt. But I'll do anything. It was really satisfying. So yes, long answer to say, I think it was a benefit that we deliberately avoided like emulating long form stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. I actually to your point about actors, I just got in the first episode that I was watching. I just got to the part where they finally all meet each other. They have the big meetup where India's coming out of the room. I was busting up laughing so hard. I was like, there's 20 minutes. Do I think I could fit this before I have to do? It's so funny. It's so good. And to your point about Mothership, I think you hit the nail on the head exactly how I feel about Mothership, where Mothership is a game in it is an OSR game, like we mentioned, in the sense that Mothership wants you as the warden, as the person running the game, to just represent what happens in the world and present the scenarios to the players, and really wants the players to drive the action and wants the players to drive the narrative. and for you to literally just be a director of just like, yeah, and when you go into the room, this is what the room looks like. And I think having people familiar with the genre of, you know, horror sci-fi thing, going like, oh yeah, there's a monster in there, you gotta go in there, and you know you gotta go in, and like not be excited about it, but you know you have to, because that's totally the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really shines in the AP, where just like that you can just, they can just do whatever they want, but
they're
pushing the game, and I think that highlights what Mothership wants to happen.
I was a little surprised, and not because it, well, okay, the edit is really good, right? Like what we were talking about specifically, and I've heard Cameron say this before, like it's, the power is in the edit. Something he says often in our fireside hot cocoa chats that we have together. But specifically that Cameron's got a way with words, he's really good at filling space, and it's hard to tell how much of that. And I also, he's a writer, as you know, as well as a film guy. So it's like, how much of this is from your brain, from Cameron's noggin, how much of this is happening in the game? But the whole thing is them playing the game. So it's still, there are no manufactured moments and beats. It's other than the typical fiat of running a game. But the right. Nice thing about games, about the reason it works as a storytelling medium that people can consume, is that all of the things, the structures you need to make story, is the job of the game master.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you don't really need to manufacture, because you're already manufacturing for the sake of the game. And I think that's a lot of where that sauce comes from, because that scene you were talking about, it's those people playing in that space together that makes it so compelling. Mm-hmm. As well as the, you know, the cool lore and the dramatic moments and but also humor. Humor is just so hard to, I mean, you can, I mean, I, some of the funniest things are things that were just written, you know, the Coen brothers, the Big Lebowski, every single stutter that Jeff Bridges does was on paper, but
really,
yeah, there's not,
that's
there's
amazing.
Not, there's not a single thing in that movie that's ad-libbed.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So it isn't to say that you can't do that, but I do think that takes a certain level of like either tireless working or genius, right? To be able to make funny happen on the page without that human element,
right?
That extra bit. And if you're going to be paying people to play in an actual play, they should probably be the kind. They should be performers. They should be good at being funny. They should be good at riffing. They should be good at that is the secret sauce with Dimension 20. I mean, it's
right.
It's not a good representation of what games at your home might be like unless you hang out with a bunch of people from Second City.
Improv comedians, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what we were aiming for. Yeah. You know, some people live in Chicago.
That's true. I've never met
people. If you live in Chicago, your games could be like that.
I don't think it's a real place, but yeah.
It's not.
That's my conspiracy theory.
I think that's
Chicago is made up to sell improv classes.
Yeah, 100%. By
Yes, and
yeah. Yeah.
So we'll come back to talking about the AP. We'll shift to talking about my boy Jack for a minute.
Jackie boy.
So Jack Dungeon Club, as we discussed, what was the thing that made you say, I want to start making the coolest looking graphics and just rad TTRPG add-ons on TikTok at all?
When does anybody realize they're a genius, Matt?
Right now, when you say you're a genius. People
telling them, yeah. I've been trying to figure out a way to make my hyper-compulsive, hyper-focused special fixations appropriate. So for me, it was never really an option to diminish the amount of time and energy and mental fortitude that I use to think about RPGs. It was figuring out a way to make that make logistically sense with the rest of my life. So, about 6 years ago, I did a Twitch actual play stream. This table, I officiated a wedding. They paid me $300. I bought this table from IKEA. It extends out. You put 10 people at it. I bought 5 Logitech cameras, a bunch of lights, and my wife was like, yeah, let's do this. So you care. We turned the living room into a studio, and then I filmed 4 live APs with 4 different storylines for like 6 months, and it was really, really hard, and nobody watched it. And
where are those, Jack? I want to look up on them.
I think I have 1 episode that is still like
give them to me, Jack.
That ended up, well, it's on my Twitch, but I don't know if you were able to save all the videos back then, or how the VOD worked back when I was doing it. I also don't really know that much about it, because the reason I stopped is I was like, you need a producer, you need people, like I can't run a game, and I was doing live cuts to cameras. You know what I mean? Like I was in the middle of, and then I was a little bit of a doodler. I've always drawn. I for a long time I had an Instagram account that was just my like character art and stuff, which is still out there. I don't promote it because I'm not particularly like interested in doing that thing anymore. But I've always been interested in making things in the space. And after the pandemic, I got on TikTok, and I was lurking, watching people for the longest time. And I was like, you know, I do this. I do this a lot. And if people want advice or want to hear my thoughts about it, it's like, I'm gonna make those videos. And I made a couple that did okay. They were mostly videos about things that I liked and how they related to gaming. I did 1 video about Disco Elysium. That was the only video I did that actually did numbers. Good. Disco Elysium.
It's very good.
Yeah. Changed my brain chemistry that game. And then the irony is that I was talking about something in a video, and then someone else was like, what do you mean reaction tables? What are you talking about? That's not a fifth edition thing. And it kind of was like, okay, well, then I'm going to make, because the problem with yapping is that you can say a lot, and it can be very meaningful, but most people don't remember things very well. So I was like, let's make a graphic. Here's a reaction table. Yeah, I could be like, go check out the last page of Morkborg, or go grab a basic, you know, BX book, and here's Google it is often a response, but I decided to package it. And then that did really well. And then I was like, maybe I make, I think the first actual like thing I did is I made a, like a little carousel that was like 6 pages, and the idea was like you could use it in D&D or whatever game you're playing, and it would be a whole dungeon. So I made Instant Dungeon, and it was, I think, the Lighthouse. It was an A24 themed. It was the Lighthouse. That's what it was.
I remember this.
So it was like you could explore. It was not. I mean, it wasn't. It was only thematically, right? Because I wasn't. I only had 6 panels, and that's kind of after that. People liked that, and I made Instant Dungeon, like my micro RPG. That's a little fantasy RPG you can play with a D6 in a cafe. That's how the people who play it, they play it at the dinner table, and they play it at bookstores and stuff. They play it when they have a few minutes to kill, because you can get through it pretty quickly. I'm sure it's like 10 people, but the 10 people who play it, that's how they play it.
Listen, I bet you. People who make TTRPGs would love to be guaranteed that 10 people would play their game.
I every one of them I love. I'm not poo-pooing on that at all. Yeah. The only reason I was able to sustain doing the amount of work that I did for so long is that the idea of influencing people's games play styles, influencing the experiences that people have at their table. For me, tabletop RPGs are anthropology. You know, you learn the game from a source, and I came from the era where I learned the game from people. Directly, somebody, I was lucky enough that somebody, hey, do you want to play Pathfinder First Edition? I was like, what the fuck's a Pathfinder? Sure. And because of that, I'm heavily influenced. We didn't play Pathfinder the way that it was written, because he was a World of Darkness guy. So he actually, he used it more like a storyteller system. Mm-hmm. So the idea of just getting to like influence people, or people just like looking at my stuff and going, that's a fun idea. My favorite thing is, the reason I kept doing this, because I would make things and people go, that's fun, I'm going to use that in my game. And then they would go, that's fun, what if I did this? What if I changed this? Or even when I had people that were being combative, oh, well, I would do it this way.
it's like, hell yeah. Tell me about how you would tell me about how you would use it that way. This is the kind of stuff I'm interested about talking online about games. I'm not interested in the discourse that, you know, continues around. I want to know, like, okay, you don't like a design choice that I made. Explain yourself. Tell me. I actually really like it when someone comes into my comments and is like, this is OP, bro. And I'm like, okay, well, that's highly subjective. Let's talk through it.
Yeah, Jack's the only person I've ever seen respond to those people, like, legitimately, like, and say, like, okay, what looks right to you? You know, what would you change? What would you do?
Yeah, he also employs the, like, haircut method, where, like, I think, like, on your first brush strokes, you're like, this afro is big, and the monster hits hard, and then people are like, ow, and then you trim it down based off.
Sure, yeah. Well, but that was kind of always the philosophy of those posts, is like, this shouldn't work at your table, because everyone's table's different, every game is different, you're assuming I'm playing, talking about 5e. Maybe I am. Maybe this is, you know, I probably did make them, I run, at the height of my, normally I have like 7 paid D&D games, right? So I am mostly making stuff for D&D, but I'm also trying to figure out how on those posts how to get as much flavor and mechanical effort with as little words as possible. Like, how can you clearly communicate? That's been the real joy. It's been like a pressure cooker for learning how I want to write. I think that. I don't think anyone should go do what I did to try to get a following on a social media platform, because I don't think that's a good use of your time. But as a writing project, figuring out how you want, and then seeing how things hit and how things don't hit, how people misunderstand you, and then going, okay, well, I still can only use 2 lines to describe this because it's a tiny little picture.
Right, there's no more space, so how do I fit more in the space?
And then beyond that, just being like, oh, I'm not waiting. I mean, especially those older posts, I'm better about editing and grammar and stuff now. Those older posts are just riddled with typos and spelling errors, and because I was like, the point is to put it out there. It's not to make something that is perfect, because I'm trying to tell people that I was trying to teach a philosophy when I started. It wasn't about writing games or like teach wanting people to see my ideas. It was about trying to dissuade a younger generation of gamers from thinking that there are best practices outside of how we interact with each other. There are certainly best practices in how we interact with each other. Session zeros, content warnings, taking care of your players, aftercare, all that's very important. But as far as like how we play game, play styles are, there's no, dice are amoral. Mechanics have no morality. And I was seeing a growing trend towards, you're a gamer, Matt. Like the idea that there is a meta.
How dare you?
That they're gamer, not non-derogatory. gamer affectionately. That there are metas that need to be maintained in order to be playing the game optimally.
Right. The idea that you're playing the game right or wrong.
Yes.
Air quotes. Yeah.
And beyond
D&D as God intended.
Yes. And beyond just being like, oh,
that's
you're
new,
playing...
That's the new rules as written.
As God intended.
It's not rules as written. It's as God intended.
Yeah.
I'm writing that down. That's funny. That's going online.
Just good Christian D&D.
Yeah. That's all I want. Christian D&D server.
The idea that, like...
That's such a good name for a book. Sorry.
My pencils don't work. Anyways. Yeah, just the idea that there are... I just was seeing a lot of this prevailing notions that you... Especially when you're having conversations with people like, that's OP. That's overpowered. It's like, oh, okay, let's get into this.
Right.
Let's unpack why you feel that way.
And what's so funny is people will put that post on... Like, I saw a number of those posts when you were doing your swords. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the sword would be like... It has the soul of a demon you have to sacrifice your heart to, and it does all of these things. And they'd be like, that's OP, bro. And I'd be like, it's a sword powered by a demon that you had to cut your heart out for.
There were 4 swords of the apocalypse, the 4 swordsmen of the apocalypse. There, each sword had a big narrative thing that it did. And if you got all 4, you could end the world.
Yeah, you're not just going to find the Sword of Pestilence, like, in a dungeon, my guy.
Because it's a MacGuffin. It's, and the idea is that it requires large narrative sacrifice. So, I mean, that's exactly it. The philosophy is like, it doesn't really matter what the pluses and minuses and now I do enjoy mechanics more than anything else. I do think mechanics are my favorite part of game design. But that there are just different ways of doing things. There aren't better ways of doing things. You know, I'm trying to think if there's any game that I just absolutely loathe mechanically. Because even like 5th edition, there are some good bits in there. It's not as a whole system. I'm not gaga about it. But it's not like it's a malfunctioning bad game. Otherwise, people wouldn't play with the pieces they like. The whole thing doesn't work, but the pieces that people like work fine enough.
Right, Jack, we gotta play Torchbearer.
Torchbearer. I liked it. I played it.
I like it too.
I will never play it again. I really liked the session that I played.
Jack, you should play Hot Circle. Do you know Hot Circle?
No, I don't.
It's not Flaming Wheel, but like toned down.
Hot Circle is someone was like, what if I put Burning Wheel in a zine?
Oh, okay. Then I would love that.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, Hot
Circle. I still have them on my desk right now, those huge, beautiful tomes.
They're beautiful. And it's a cool game.
I have like 8 Burning Wheel books.
There's some cool stuff going on there. As a game designer, I really liked it. As a player, I was like, I don't really want to do this again. But this is because different games for different people. What I did love about that, the one time I played it with, it was the person's favorite game. So it's very fun to sit with somebody.
Oh, that's always good.
Yeah, I would play the most convoluted. Adam's going to hear this and think I'm bad mouthing, but often people who, when they're explaining the thing they love, they're actually worse at it because they want to make sure you get it. It's like when you watch a movie with somebody and they're like, "Put your phone down. Look."
This they want you to like it too.
This is the scene, and it's like, well, that's distracting too. It's just as distracting as me. Checking my backer kit.
This is too real. This is like how like my first year of playing like RPGs with my friends went before I realized maybe I was the problem.
Yeah, I talk a lot of shit on shitty DM practice GM practices because I used to be one. You know, I used to
not anymore though.
No.
Now he's fantastic.
I used to be very when it was just my friends because I was not playing with people who played RPGs. I was playing people I convinced to play RPGs with me, and they were just, they loved me, so they were like, sure. And then we ended up, they loved it too. It was a thing that we all loved together. But also, like, I shouldn't have been a dick about them having their phones at their table, you know.
So, I think that's a big like 2020 thing. I think there's a lot of things that you can be told, like, these are things you should do as a DM and da 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 da, and you can internalize some of them, and I think some of them literally you just have to do them. And I'm not saying go be a shitty DM on purpose, but I think so many of just like the ways that you go, I shouldn't have done that. That was not and you have to internalize it. Like, you have to live through it, and only then you recognize it.
That's how you mature, right? You can't. No one can can tell you maturity.
Self-reflection is important. Yeah.
It is helpful to model things for people though, and that's kind of that's kind of all I try to do now is just be like, okay, well, because I'd say that at least 40%, 50% of my paid game players are GMs themselves. So I have a lot of people who I think, not that I'm any kind of expert, but rather that I've just spent a lot of time thinking about how I like to play the game. I'm just very intentional, right? I think that maybe that's, and you're just trying to, like, you are what you consume. You are if you are at bad tables and you have bad practices, you can't really get mad at people for having been taught bad practices by not fun people.
And they think that's like, how it is.
I think this is how it is. Yeah. The same way it's like, I can't get too mad at the D&D only crowd because that's all they know. You know, it's and you're never going to win them over by being like, your game's bad. That whole my game isn't a war game thing that was happening a few weeks ago. It's like, well, those people were upset because they think you're talking about their experience.
Right.
Like they don't have anything outside of that. So
it was a losing game because everyone who was reacting negatively to it was because they perceived it as a negative slight.
As an attack.
So even you know, I made a post about it where I was just like, look at the number of rules in the book dedicated to combat. It far outstrips the rules dedicated to anything else.
It's, right, that'll just not...
Right, I perceived it as I'm just literally making a factual statement. I'm not even putting a...
Observation,
a bias to it. You know, I'm not
well,
saying that's
just the history of it. I know a lot of people are like, well, that's not how we play it anymore. And it's like, well, we're not actually talking about how you play it. We're talking about what it is.
And you like know? You said, TTRPGs are anthropology. They are a book. They're a thing in a book, but they are also the thing at the table.
Yeah.
And I think that is sort of the split with people who, I don't want to say like D&D only in a derogatory way or anything, but I think that's the difference between people who view TTRPGs as a thing
proudly
that
they D&D do. Perhaps as though
they view it like TTRPGs as a thing that they do versus a work.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, it's kind of a chronically online thing to an extent, but in a non-negative way. Like, I know a large number of people who don't think about TTRPGs as in-depth as some of the other people I know. Mm-hmm. They just see a cool TTRPG and they play it and they love it.
I also know that some of those people are some of my, like, my favorite people to play with. I'm not at all saying, yeah, I agree with you. I'm not at all saying that, like, you have to have this, like, super heady idea of what these games are in order to be good at them or to enjoy playing them. As a matter of fact, I'd say that having the level of thought that I have about it or we have about it sometimes can be a detriment to overall enjoying them, right?
Right. It's the CinemaSins thing where you're not watching the movie, you're watching what's happening in the movie. You're watching for things happening in the movie, you're not watching the movie.
Yeah.
And there's a familiarity that comes with it that affects how you enjoy it, and that can be positive and negative on both ends.
100%.
Okay, I'm really sorry to do this. I need like a 5-minute thing. My dog has been asking to go out.
Oh my
and
god!
I know. She had a diarrhea thing.
As long as you don't cut this part, that's okay.
Oh my god, Matt!
No, this part I'm gonna cut.
Oh god damn it,
Matt! Oh my god!
No, this part makes me look bad. So this part I'm
gonna okay.
Matt, please don't cut this part. Please,
I'm begging you. Go let your dog out.
Please, Matt. Yeah, give me like 5 minutes. I'm really sorry.
Bye. Our dog trauma is only for the monsters in our game. We want your puppy to not.
Ooh, yeah, clean segue into doggy dog.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. When we get back, we'll talk about Voidstream and doggy dog.
Cool.
Please, okay. Matt.
Back.
Please.
All right. That is episode one. I hope everybody enjoyed this first little bit with Jack and Cameron. Like I said at the top, episode 2 will be coming in just a little bit. It might already be in your podcast feed, depending on when you're listening to this. All the links to everything will be in the show notes. As always, you can click through and find links to anything we talk about during the show, which is a thing I like, because I just like, you know, when you listen to a podcast, somebody mentions something offhand and you're like, what the heck are they talking about? Is that a movie? Or, hey, guess what? The link's right there. Especially when we're talking about games and different stuff like that. I like making links and the info for that as available as possible. So, episode 1, done. Episode 2, coming soon. Maybe now? Go see. But I'll see you for that one.